and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. I'm Darren Hefty. We're going to be talking about pre-emerge wheat herbicides. And right there, I probably caught a few of you off guard saying, wait a minute, pre-emerge herbicides for wheat? Yeah, pre-emerge herbicides for wheat. When you think about almost every crop grown anywhere I can think of, we generally have pre-emerge options. Weed control before that crop's even out of the ground. When we're thinking about soil residual products, it's not just something for soybeans trying to keep Palmer pigweed out. This is something that can be used in pretty much every crop. And when we think about wheat, there's a few weeds that we're really concerned about right now. Let's start with the grasses. We've got a grass crop, and when you've got grass weeds, it's pretty tricky to have herbicides that are selective. Now, when I say selective, what that means, or what I mean by that, is kill one grass, but be safe to another, namely wheat. So we don't want to hurt the wheat at all. In fact, we want to, when we spray it on there, we want to have no impact on yield whatsoever on the wheat itself if there weren't weeds out there. Now, we want to be extremely focused on which weeds we're going to get, and that's why it's tricky picking herbicides in a grass crop that are going to kill grass weeds. So when we look at pre-emerge options, we don't have a tremendous amount of options here, but we do have some that can do a nice job for us. Probably the most popular one that gets used pre-emerge in wheat is a product called Prepare. And when I think about Prepare, I think, all right, I'm going to kill some weeds, but not all. And there's a few things going on here. First of all, we've got an ALS product. So you're in that group 2 family, and whenever we're looking at group 2s, you know there's going to be ALS-resistant weeds, namely the broadleaf weeds. So when we think about broadleaf control with Prepare, we're going to get some broadleaves, but there's going to be others that we're not going to touch, like kochia, for example. But when we look at grasses, we can do a decent job with Prepare. So it's the same ingredient as what we use in Everest, and we can control some of the spring annual grasses like foxtails, for example. We can do okay on that. We can also get a little bit of an impact on some of those winter annual weeds like downy brome, for example. So it's going to have fairly broad spectrum action on grasses. But here's one thing that's a little bit tricky about Prepare: the use rate. When we've got low pH soils, like especially when we get out in the Palouse, we'll talk to a lot of guys commonly that are down in the low fives for soil pH. They're typically running with 0.3 ounces, which is the normal labeled rate of Prepare. When we talk to farmers in the Dakotas, for example, with high pH soils, many of them are only using 0.2 ounces on Prepare and still getting decent weed control. Brian, you know, when you think about that, this happens quite often that we end up with varying rates depending on soil conditions and the weeds that we're going after.
Yeah, it's right on the labels of a lot of these products too, not necessarily Prepare, but a lot of them are going to have different rate ranges depending on soil pH, cation exchange capacity. I mean, a lot of things can vary there. But there's no point in spending extra money when you don't need to, number one. And the other thing is carryover that you have to be concerned about.
Well, I think the other thing too, Brian, is just for a lot of farmers that are planting wheat and haven't really used pre-emerge herbicides before, they just have to have the right expectation of what am I going to get out of a pre-emerge, because I'm probably not going to get every weed under control season long, but what are my expectations? If I'm putting something like Prepare out, do you think you're going to have to come back with an Axial or something else post-emerge for grass control?
Well, it all depends on how bad your weeds are. And that's one of the things we talk about all the time. You want to start with a good pre, and then you just have to scout your fields. You might have a whole bunch of weeds later, or you might have none. So you got to scout. And the point is, if you scout and there are a lot of weeds, you can absolutely afford to put a herbicide out, because otherwise you're going to give up lots of yield.
All right. Now, when it comes to giving up yield, one of the things that's been a real challenge in many rotations has been some of the broadleaf weeds that are Roundup resistant, resistant to ALS herbicides, and a growing list of herbicides that some of these broadleaf weeds are becoming resistant to. When I think about wheat, I think a lot about kochia as a driver weed from a broadleaf standpoint, and it's resistant to Roundup. And Roundup, even where it is still working, it's working less effectively. So we're hearing more farmers talk about Sharpen, and it's not cheap, but the broadleaf control of Sharpen is pretty good when you can use a strong rate in front of wheat. Can you talk a little bit about Sharpen and just set some expectations, Brian?
Well, yeah, Sharpen's not cheap. It's $10 an acre, but you're going to get a lot of weed control for 30 to 60 days. Just depends on rainfall and soil conditions and everything else. But the point with Sharpen is if you do have broadleaf weeds, this is the only pre-emerge herbicide we have that is fantastic that you can spray right around planting time. You got to spray before the crop emerges, but you can spray right around planting time, and it works phenomenally well.
Yeah, and the burn down is another aspect that many farmers have really liked, because there's a lot of wheat that's put in no-till acres. And Sharpen is a really effective burn down product, but you're going to need the right additives to make that happen. You're going to need a nitrogen source. You're going to need an oil in there, which isn't really cumbersome. It's just something that you have to keep in mind. We see many farmers throwing Roundup in with Sharpen because Sharpen is really effective on broadleaf control. It really doesn't have much impact on grasses, which is a nice thing for your wheat crop that it's not going to hurt your wheat. But if you've got a little bit of grass coming up out there too, you're going to need some Roundup in that burn down to take the grasses out.
Yeah, Sharpen is certainly not a standalone wheat product, but in terms of broadleaves, it's fantastic. And we do recommend it for guys that have broadleaf issues in their wheat, especially resistant kochia.
We're going to be talking about some of the pre-emerge wheat herbicide options and strategies that you may employ on your farm. Many of these herbicides that you've heard us talk about already today, you're saying, well, wait a second, I use that one in corn or I use that one in soybeans. Yep, there's a lot of crossover here, and it's fun to cross-train yourself a little bit on what other things I can learn about the products I'm using. We'll be right back after this.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and our discussion is based around pre-emerge wheat herbicides, but we'll also be tackling other agronomic questions as the show goes on. Happy to be joined by Nick Flights right now with Pentair Hypro. Nick, how are you doing today?
Very good. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well, doing well. We're talking pre-emerge, and this changes things just a little bit in terms of how we're spraying. When we think about spraying post-emerge, we're looking at that crop canopy and how do we get really good coverage, even though we've got big crop up there that's going to catch some of that spray. When we're looking at pre-emerge herbicides, we get a couple different options. Let's talk first about bare ground, Nick. If you've got ground that's been tilled and everything's smooth and level, there's nothing up. You just want to get a pre-emerge residual herbicide out. What do you think about in terms of achieving really good coverage to get a nice even layer of protection?
So if the ground's worked up very well, we have a very smooth surface, not a lot of ruts and soil clods, or in a no-till situation, then it's pretty forgiving. And in that case, I really just focus on the application volume. Now, the easiest way to improve spray coverage, whether that's on a bare surface or in a crop canopy, is to alter our spray volume. And a higher spray volume is going to provide that higher coverage that we're looking for. So in that situation, you know, the ground's worked up very well. It's a pretty forgiving situation. You know, nozzle choice there isn't going to play as big of a factor for the agronomic efficacy. You know, we can maybe lean more towards just protecting ourselves with a little bit of drift reduction, maybe using a little bit larger droplet or a drift reduction nozzle rather than a high coverage nozzle for that application.
All right, Nick, you brought up one thing there. You said if there's a lot of soil clods or the ground's kind of rough, and I've talked to a lot of farmers across the country that have said, didn't get my tillage done last fall. It might be a little rough this spring, so probably good timing here. But what do you do in that rougher ground?
And I brought that up because I figured that would be the case this year with the conditions we had last fall, getting crops out of the field and that just the way the weather didn't cooperate. And so under those scenarios, coverage is more of a challenge. Ruts, those clods and that, create a barrier for spray droplets, in a sense. That on the front side, we can see really good coverage, but on the back side, there's going to be areas that the spray droplets miss. And that's where we see those weed escapes. It's a common occurrence. And so in that case, nozzle selection can really help counteract that. And when we talk about nozzle selection for those type pre-emerge applications, I always recommend something that's going to produce an incline spray pattern. So it's not spraying straight down toward the ground. It's going to be diagonally. And that's going to ensure that we get uniform coverage on all sides of those soil clods, ruts, any kind of crop residue piles that may be left out in the field.
Nick, one more question for you. When we think about pre-emerge herbicides, a lot of times guys will say, well, hey, I'm putting it out with 20 gallons of nitrogen or even 30 gallons of nitrogen or more. When we're doing those kinds of high-volume fertility applications, how does that change things in terms of application?
So if it, you know, if you're altering the viscosity or solution density, it can change things, or you may need to bump your pressure up some. Because you're going to have a lower flow rate through the system if you're using a high rate of liquid nitrogen. You know, generally, though, if you have a good source of nitrogen that is going to dissolve well into the solution, there usually aren't many issues that we see. So that's kind of key, making sure you have, you know, a good high-quality source of liquid nitrogen. And you should be in good shape with most nozzles. But there is a... There are a couple nozzles out there that are designed specifically for early season burn down plus liquid nitrogen applications, like the high flow nozzle that Hypro carries.
Yeah, there's a lot of situations that we've got to be prepared about, and getting the sprayer set up now is going to be important. So when the snow finally melts away in the north and conditions get right for applying those pre-emerge herbicides and potentially fertilizer as well, we're ready to go. Nick Flights, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
got Jeff Mertz with the North Dakota Grain Growers with us right now. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, lots of stuff going on, and I find it interesting. You got a very active organization in North Dakota. What are the big issues that you're facing right now?
Well, you know, a couple things on our radars. We've been working on the wetlands issues in North Dakota. We're in the Prairie Pothole region, and trying to get NRCS to, you know, come up with. We talked about minimalist effects, so you know, those small areas that they could actually overlook them because they really don't hold that much water.
Kind of nuisance wetlands.
There you go. And the other thing is trying to get North Dakota. It seems like the North Dakota, Minnesota, our determinations are inconsistent with the rest of the country. So we've been working with that. We had a group go down to Washington, Cal Van Bruggen, Levi Otis, ourself, corn, wheat, the late Dale Ivory, Brian Oschlager. He wrote the Swamp Buster Manual. He was with us. So we had a very good delegation down there. We met with Bill Northey on these things, and he gave us about an hour and 45 minutes. So it was, you know, they know there's an issue out there, and we just got to try to work through it. And, you know, there's, then you get the conservative groups on the other side working the other way. So it's a challenge.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of things in play there. No doubt about it. You know, speaking about that in North Dakota, here's one of the things that we've had a lot of questions about, Jeff, from around the country. Guys are saying, man, I'm hearing North Dakota is going to have a big acre shift. How does all the snow impact that? And what are you hearing for, planting intentions going into next year?
You know, a lot of things are up in the air. There wasn't much fertilizer put on last fall. You know, you get down in that littoral area, they were really wet. A couple of my friends a couple of the directors down there, they didn't get done until with their corn until I think late December. So, you know, the whole trade issue with China, now we're looking at we didn't get in on the TPP, and April 1st, you know, our wheat is going to be at a 40-cent disadvantage. 50% of our hard-red spring wheat gets exported, and a lot of it goes to Japan and the Pacific Rim area. They like the high-quality hard-red spring wheat. So I think a lot of guys are going to stick with their rotations, but, you know, depending on what happens with China and the trade, you know, you could possibly see more soybeans. I don't know. Brother, he was out selling soybeans and corn yesterday, and they made some sales. So, I mean, it's one of those deals.
Yep. Yeah, it's just going to be slow going. Were there any other issues you wanted to talk about specifically today, Jeff?
No, just the fact that we're going to go down to Commodity Classic, and it's a good opportunity. I mean, it's a premier egg show, and we work with the North Dakota barley also, and you know, trade is a key issue. A lot of barley gets shipped to Mexico. A lot of wheat gets shipped to Mexico, corn. So I guess one thing that, you know, as far as North Dakota went this year, we really came together as all the ag commodity groups, even on the national level, just to ensure a farm bill. And that was pretty big to get that carried across the finish line. Now we just got to get it implemented, I guess.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. And you're right. Isn't that strange that we have to fight to get a farm bill passed in this country when ag is, well, I guess I shouldn't say that people understand this. They really don't. They don't understand what a backbone of our country ag is. So we really appreciate the work that your group does, Jeff, up in North Dakota and certainly with the groups around the country, getting these things through that benefit all of us as farmers. Jeff, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. We'll have to have you back again sometime.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. Have a good day. Thank you.
You as well. We're talking about wheat today, and we're going to look specifically at some of the pre-emerge herbicide options and talk to some farmers, see what they're doing around the country, and talk about some strategies you may consider as well. You can send us an email today, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, or Darren Hefty. We'll be right back.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about wheat specifically, and we're talking about some of the pre-emerge herbicides on wheat and just some management practices that are being used right now. Hopefully you find this interesting. Even if you're a corn and soybean rotation guy, a lot of the products and strategies that we're using are going to be the same as we do in other crops. And it's pretty neat, some of that crossover. We talked a little bit about spraying and application equipment and nozzle selection and those kinds of things earlier in the show. And that's going to hold true regardless of what you're using for crops as well. When we think about some of this rough ground and all the challenges we're going to face this year with such a tough fall in many areas of the country. We've got Mark with us right now out in Colorado. Mark, was it a tough fall out in your country too?
You know, it was a tough fall here in eastern Colorado, but probably for a different reason than what you experienced in the Midwest. We were very dry. Our grain moistures and our corn were dropping 2 and 3 points per day. And we got to a lot of corn with the combine that was running 13, 14, 15% moisture just because it was so hot and so dry.
So whenever we have that issue here, which happens from time to time as well, it's no fun because we have more loss at the header. What kind of challenge does volunteer corn out in the field present for you?
You know, we have a lot of rotation in what we do here, but when we do go back corn on corn, we have to actually use a little bit of tillage from time to time, especially if we had some ear slip or maybe that shank gave way and we dropped a few ears out in the field. But now that everything is fairly Roundup ready or has the Liberty Link trait in it, we have a little bit of trouble. So often we'll rotate to, say, a sugar beet or a dry bean, and then we'll hit the field with something like a Select to try to knock out that volunteer.
Yeah, that's kind of nice when you've got a diverse rotation like that to be able to take out some of these challenges. Like in wheat, for example, we're facing a lot of Roundup-resistant kochia and cheatgrass and some really difficult weeds. I would assume that crop rotation plays a big part for you in keeping those from being a big problem.
Yeah, it certainly does. That crop rotation helps. We try to do as good of a job as we can of trying to keep that crop weed free so that we set up for the next crop, because it seems like most of our strategy starts with trying to keep us relatively weed free so that we start the next year in kind of a weed free environment, if there is such a thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't know that there is. I wish there was. You'd think after like 21 years of Weed of the Week that we would have helped clean something up, but there's just more weeds and different weeds all the time. We've mentioned this crop rotation a little bit, and you've got quite a few different crops that you rotate to, especially compared to our farm where a lot of times it's two or maybe three crops is all in our rotation. Do pre-emerge herbicides, do they become a challenge for you to find ones that'll help this year's crop but not impact what you have for options rotating to?
You know, sometimes it will, especially if we're looking at, say, a malt barley, wheat, or corn rotation scheme. We try to reserve some of our options for just our cereals like wheat and barley, and then use different chemistries in the corn to try to keep some of our weed shift off balance. But we still are starting to incorporate a little bit of tillage in there from time to time, like tillage, especially in a corn crop, just to kind of get rid of some of our late season escapes.
Yeah, I like that hybrid approach where you don't want to do tillage, but occasionally you realize, hey, you know what? This is the best and cheapest option, and it's very effective, and it can help us every now and then. Not all the time, but every now and then that might be a good option for us. And the wheat, do you use pre-emerge herbicides? And if so, what are you using?
You know, we will from time to time, especially on some of those no-till acres. If we're going with a spring wheat or maybe a spring malt barley, sometimes we'll go to the field with, say, Roundup and prepare. But if we feel that we're going to have a little bit of a weed issue, say, with maybe some glyphosate-tolerant kochia or maybe lamb's quarter, we'll usually use Sharpen in a tank mix with Roundup.
Yeah, it's nice having a few different options that we've got now. And some of those, like Sharpen that you mentioned, can get used in other crops in your rotation too, which really helps. I've been talking with Mark out in Colorado. Mark, really appreciate having you on. Hopefully you get enough moisture. Sounds like there's plenty of snow up in the mountains. Maybe you'll get some snow there too to get things started off right in the spring.
Well, we finally had our first measurable snow in a long time, but we could sure use more before spring hits.
You bet. Well, thanks, Mark. We really appreciate having you on.
You bet. Thank you.
Got Kirk Sager with us right now. He works with FMC out in the state of Washington. Kirk, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Darren. Thank you.
What kind of fall and winter have you guys had?
We had a pretty easy fall and a pretty mild winter until February, and it has turned cold like the rest of the Midwest, and we've got a lot of snow.
Wow. Hey, fun. Yeah, it's been quite the interesting winter, no doubt about it. But we still have work to get done come spring. When you were looking at pre-emerge herbicide options and the crop rotation that you're used to out in your area of the country, what are some of the things that we're seeing, like with Anthem Flex and some of the other pre's that guys are running with?
So what we're seeing out of Anthem Flex is really we're targeting the grassy weeds like Italian rye, rat-tail fescue, and for the PNW, downy brome, which is becoming a bigger problem, especially as we move into the drier areas just because of group 2 resistance. The other thing we're getting out of these pre's in wheat is, you know, wild oat suppression, kochia suppression, and when we use it in winter wheat, we're getting our winter annual suppression out of especially prickly lettuce and mayweed chamomile.
You know, you mentioned a number of different weeds there, and also we're talking about Anthem Flex. And for some farmers, they'll say, well, wait a minute, I haven't used Anthem Flex before in front of my small grains. Basically, we've got the same active ingredient as what some farmers have used with Zidua. I talked to some guys that say, hey, I've tried Zidua before. Anthem Flex has got some of that same active ingredient, but it also has another active ingredient, AIM. Can you talk about that and how important that is for the no-till guys, Kirk?
So for the no-till guys, what AIM is bringing to the table is that added burn-down enhancement with your glyphosate and your other burn-down materials. We use AIM a lot in Montana where kochia is a big problem just to enhance our burn-down effect. And when we look at the rate of Anthem Flex we're generally recommending in the small grains, we're getting a full rate of AIM in that mix.
Yeah, it's really pretty impressive, and price-wise this year, this has been a pretty interesting thing too for guys. There are some pretty good programs out there, Anthem Flex being one, where you can get the two active ingredients that are in there cheaper than if you were trying to source each one individually. So why would you not use that type of approach? Now, you mentioned grass control here, and that's really where the Group 15s have been utilized in corn and in soybeans to some degree. We've been looking at the grass control. You mentioned some pretty difficult grasses, though. Downy brome, rattail fescue, Italian rye. That almost sounds too good to be true.
You know, you think it is, but it's the biggest problem is not really the control of the weeds. It's getting the mindset of a wheat farmer who's generally spraying post-emerge products to think like a corn farmer does with a pre. But when we look at that, we see superb control of all those grassy weeds, especially with Anthem Flex.
And here's the other real big benefit. It's not a group one and it's not a group two. So we've got a whole different mode of action there where we aren't facing resistance issues or decreasing effectiveness like we have with group ones and twos. So it's kind of something totally different. Now, when you think about your rotations out there, does it limit you in any way, or does it work in a certain rotation better than others?
Our biggest market for it in wheat is the wheat pea rotation, and really the only crop that we rotate to that we see, you know, some labeled rotational restrictions is canola. But in a standard pea wheat or pea lentil or pea chickpea rotation, there's very few, if any, rotational restrictions that impact you.
Yeah, we've talked to so many farmers around the country that have said, wow, adding an Anthem Flex in has totally made wheat doable for us again because they've been fighting. A lot of guys with Italian rye have said this has been just a game changer for them. So something to take a look at. If you're looking at pre-emerge herbicides you've been using, maybe Prepare or Sharpen, you could get kind of the best of both worlds here with a whole different mode of action in a product like Anthem Flex. Kirk, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
All right. Thank you very much, Darren.
We'll talk more about some of these pre-emerge options and where you may use them right after this. Stay tuned.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstoss.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. the exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We've been talking about pre-emerge wheat herbicides. We've got a number of questions that have been coming in the Ag PhD mailbag. If you've got a question for us, you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media. Brian, we were talking just a little about Anthem Flex, and it really does add something compared to just straight Zidua. For the no-till guys, Zidua doesn't have any burndown activity, but when you've got that full rate of aim in there, you got a pretty powerful tank mix partner.
Yeah, and it can be used early post. You have to be careful about when you're using Zidua. It's a Group 15. It'd be similar to Dual, Outlook, Harness, or Pass. You can't spray that early post, So you've got to go late pre or very early post. And I know something we're going to be talking about here just in the next few days in a presentation we have to give is just if you really wanted the ultimate weed control in wheat, then you could start with something like Sharpen pre. You could come with Anthem Flex early post, and then you can still come with more later on post-emerge if you really want to hammer some of these Roundup-resistant broadleaves that are out there. So it's exciting, all the options we have for wheat today, because you go back 10 years ago, we didn't have Sharpen, we didn't have Zidua, and even Prepare, we didn't have, I don't remember when it was, probably 10, 12 years ago, something like that. So, I mean, we have all these great choices now, and you should be able to get good weed control. But the big thing I tell guys is, look, you may never have used a pre-emerge wheat herbicide before, but at least try some on your, especially your weediest fields. This dramatically cuts your weed population, and it should be increasing your yield for a pretty low cost.
Yeah, it's a good investment. And then you think about just your time and time management. Pre-emerge herbicides, you've got time to do things. And for guys in drier parts of the country, a lot of times with heavy ground, we're out there quite early putting on pre's. Because what's going to happen? There's no weeds growing. There's not enough heat or anything to really start breaking down these herbicides. They'll last for a while out there. Plus, you've got some more time to get some moisture on them to get them down into the soil. And it's a time of year where you're not super busy. When you think about all those post-emerge applications that you're trying to make, we've got to be extremely timely. And we've got to do a lot of scouting and that kind of thing. Not that you're going to get away from scouting entirely, but you've got so much broader window for your post-emerge applications when you only have a few weeds out there versus when you've got some real thick patches. And that's really a big benefit of the pre-emerge herbicides, to just buy you some more time when you are super busy. All right, Brian, anything else you wanted to mention on pre-emerge wheat herbicides, or you want to jump into some mailbag questions?
Nope, that's it.
All right, let's hit the mailbag, Janelle.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Oh boy, we'll start with a tiling question for you, Brian. This one comes from Kyle. He said, I've noticed on your TV show that some of the tile plows that are running seem to have a PVC level indicator of some sort. What is this apparatus and how is it used?
Well, yeah, there are a few different things that you've got there. One, there will be a chain hanging a lot of times just to give you an idea how deep you're going. You also may have a level on there to see if your plow is running level or relatively level. And the point is you don't want to be cutting down at an angle. I mean, that would indicate there's something wrong with your plow, your control system, maybe how it's hooked up. If it's running downward at an angle or upward at an angle, that when it's not supposed to be, you've got a problem. You may actually cause issues with your tile, not get the tile installation done right. So there are going to be some things on different plows that are going to at least give you a visual to whether or not it looks like the plow is running relatively correctly.
Yeah, it's kind of nice to have those things, too, because you're busy. I mean, you're looking at a lot of things. You're thinking about, okay, what else can I do with the tile? Because a lot of times you end up making a few adjustments on the fly once you get to the field and you realize, ooh, this hill is a little bit bigger than what I thought it was, or maybe I should run another line here.
I mean, with the grade control system, it's going to do it automatically. So there's really nothing you're doing other than driving, and you should be paying attention to what's happening with that plow behind you. But it's like anything else, you know, we've got all these fancy control systems and we're using GPS, and it's amazing having that technology. But you have to make sure that, you know, you're taking a look at it and it does at least appear that things are going okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the question and thanks for watching our show, Kyle. We really appreciate that. All right, get a question. This one's from Dave in Illinois, and he said, I happened to attend your meeting at Normal, Illinois this winter, and I had a soil compaction issue that I wanted to talk to you about. There's a company coming through my ground with heavy equipment, and they're putting in a line of some sort. And anyway, they've done some damage in terms of compaction. The ground was pretty wet this fall, and so they're going to offer some sort of settlement for 2 years' worth of crop damage due to compaction. We're going to reseed this area in 2019. I'm just curious if you had any chart or graph to show about soil damage from an outside contractor coming through your field and how long you could expect to have problems.
I don't have any chart or graph that's showing that. I'm sure there has been some research work done on that, some university level research work. So you'd have to search around a little bit for that. But no, the whole thing is, here in the United States, we have the great privilege to live here and work here and farm here. It's an amazing country. And there are some of these things that we have to do for the overall good of everyone. And sometimes it doesn't turn out to be the overall good for you. So we've had similar issues in the past where it's water lines, it's power lines, it's something going through our field. It's a small strip. In a couple years, it mostly gets straightened up, but you know, there are cases where it'll be 10 or 20 years and it still isn't taken care of. And here's why. Because many times subsoil gets pulled up and mixed around with the topsoil. And if you're not doing everything you can in those small areas to rebuild topsoil, then you're going to suffer longer. So the things that I'm going to talk to you about are probably, I want to look at my calcium level. I have to make sure I have a really good calcium level that gives me good soil porosity, less chance for compaction. I want to make sure that I'm using some compost, manure, chicken litter, something just in that strip. And I want to use a fairly good dose. I don't want to use so much that I overdo it on salt, but I want to use that for probably a couple of years. I would even consider in the fall, if I don't have time to put cover crops in all my ground, I might just in that strip. I want to keep something growing there as much as I can year-round for a couple of years. So there are a few little things you can do to speed up the process of making that better. But you know, it makes me feel pretty good that the company is willing to give you some money for a couple of years, but you know, don't get too bent out of shape over the whole deal. You can get that ground fixed. I'm sure a small amount of acres. And
yeah, the big thing is just the topsoil. If you can keep the topsoil on the top, and you know where we see problems is when they do a bunch of digging and they end up with subsoil now on top of the ground instead of topsoil. That's where we end up with the long-term issues. The compaction thing and building the soil structure, you know, maybe something too that you just say, look, I'm going to go to grass in those areas here just for a little bit because it probably isn't that huge an area, at least not that wide out into your field. Maybe you go to grass and try and build up that soil structure with no tillage and a perennial root system in there for a while and then come back to
cropping. The only thing though, Darren, is I you may have to do some deep tillage in that area, maybe just with a straight shank narrow point so you're not turning the soil again.
No, I got you. Yeah, to start the whole process off, that might be a good thing, and then get everything nice and level and seed a perennial into there is what I would do. But I get it. You kind of want to keep it the same as everything else in some cases, so you just have to use your best judgment. We've got more questions coming up here in the Ag PhD mailbag. And, of course, if you have a question, you can email us radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by AMVAC Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us, because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, and we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag where we're taking your questions here for the rest of the show. I've got a number of emails that I wanted to get through today. Got one from Don, and he is an AP Environmental and Earth Science teacher at a high school in New York. Don said, I've become addicted to Ag PhD. I listen every day on my way home from school. I'll be retiring from teaching in June and will begin work on my friend's vegetable farm after that. Really excited about that. Said, in the meantime, I'm teaching AP Environmental and have used many of your segments of Farm Basics and Ag Minute to teach students about production agriculture. And the students have raved about your clarity of concepts presented. Hey, thanks, Don. Really appreciate that. Don's question is, said, is it possible to access past episodes of a number of these segments? And he listed some of the segments below that he was interested in. You bet, Don. No problem about that. We've got a lot of our content on our website at agphd.com, as you found out. We've got a lot of it up on YouTube as well. You can check out our YouTube channel there and subscribe to that. You'll get new content as it gets posted. And also have our production people follow up with you and make sure you've got access to anything that you need. I really do appreciate that. And Brian, you know, this is one of the things. As we travel around the country, we hear a lot of folks, both at the high school level and at the collegiate level, utilizing Ag PhD content as part of their classroom material, and that's really cool.
One of the things that we have always done is try to take complex topics and keep them as simple as possible. And I really think that's important because in our world today, everybody is so busy and they don't have a lot of time to focus on whatever they're looking at. So we've got to get right to the point and hopefully it's doing some good out there. But I just get excited too when I hear the word environmental, because there are so many things out there that want to lead you toward the belief that farming is bad for the environment and you know, our food isn't safe and our water isn't safe and all that kind of stuff is ridiculous. Farmers in North America are doing an amazing job and it just continues to get better each year.
Yep, I agree with that. Don, thank you so much. Really appreciate the feedback and your email today. Got one from Dustin here. And Dustin said, I'm wondering about the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app and utilizing that to help me in my situation. I want to calculate what I'm going to need for a couple of crops here. I'm sampling in the spring, and if I spread fertilizer in the fall, but I didn't get soil tests pulled, so I've got 2019's fertility out there. I want to pull samples in the spring after I plant and the crop starts growing, and I'm planning to raise a 220 bushel corn crop this year. But in 2020, I want to raise 80 bushel soybeans on that same ground. So is there a way to do the math in the REX part on your soils app, your soil testing app, so I can think about next year's 80 bushel soybean crop, but also the removal that I'm going to get from this year's 220 bushel corn crop? So basically, it'd be like figuring double crop.
Yeah, it's real easy. Just add the two numbers together. But the one thing that I wanted to say, two things, I guess. First of all, you got to replace what you're removing with the grain. So make sure you're at least putting that out if you want to stay even. But on top of that, you have to make sure that when you start next year with the soybeans, that you're going to hit that total number. So, for example, it takes, I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head, but I would just say you've got to look at the grain plus what it takes to produce the stover. You've got to have that in total out there. And then, like I say, the crop removal, the grain removal for corn and beans, you want to at least be putting that much out so you're going to replace what you're going to remove.
All right, so but look at grain removal on 220 bushel corn, and then on our fertility app, you just type in 80 bushel soybeans and look at the total then is what you're saying. Make sure you've got the 78 pounds of phosphate, 176 pounds of K2O potassium then. Make sure you've got that much left?
Well, in your soil, yes. Yep. But anyway, what I was going to say is I want you to think about your best yielding spots on the farm. Are you going to get more than 220 on corn, and are you going to get more than 80 on beans? This is why we talk about variable rate fertility, because on a lot of farms, the variance is huge. There will be a high of 300 bushel corn and a low of 150, and a high of 100 bushel beans and a low of 50. So when you're going to have that, it's great to talk about, okay, this blanket recommendation that we just made, but if it's me, I'm still going to do some variable rate out there So I'm putting the fertilizer where I need it most.
The other comment that Dustin had made, he said, I did tillage in the fall, so I was waiting till spring to let that ground settle out since I'd already disturbed it. Totally get that. A lot of guys ran into that situation this past year where if you've just done fresh tillage, it's not the best time to soil sample. You're better off sampling before that tillage is done or in the spring after everything's settled back down. So I'm with you on that, Dustin. And also, we're hearing a lot of guys talk about spring soil sampling. Just from a workload standpoint, if you've got too much going on in the fall, guys say, man, I've got more time in the spring, which I don't know. It seems like it's always a busy time on the farm, but if that works better for your operation, that's a good way to do it too. All right, get a comment here mostly from Ryan. And Ryan said, I'm in Wisconsin. I'm strip-tilling soybeans on 30-inch rows. And this strip-till has totally changed the game for us in beans. I actually planted some beans in late March and made 77 bushels per acre. The strip-tills allowed me to plant some soybeans first. I've got that nice warm strip that I'm going into, of course. And he said, we've got two machines for planting. And we're always planting beans and corn at the same time. The last 3 years, we started planting soybeans April 25th. So normally late April, he just did a few acres on March 23rd just to see what would happen. But he really likes planting beans in the strip, and he's also working with some lower populations and likes that ground is a little bit higher on those berms in a strip. And good comments there, Ryan. Lots of good things. We really like strip till on soybeans as well. And we've been doing a lot of fertility right in those strips, and that's made a huge difference for us. We like narrow row spacings, but we feel like that fertility right in the row has given our soybeans an advantage in the strips that has kind of taken away anything that we might have lost by going to a little wider spacing.
Well, when you talk about that narrow row spacing, I used to like narrow row spacing in soybeans. On our farm, I don't like it anymore just because the disease pressure is just so unbelievable. And even spraying three times, we can't eliminate all the sclerotinia white mold. So I'd rather have a good tolerant white mold variety, plant it in 30-inch rows, let a little more air move through there, and go from there. But yeah, with our situation and the terrible disease issue that we've got, then narrow rows for us just don't work.
Nope, I'm with you on that one. I like the 30-inch rows for a lot of reasons. Okay, got another one from Brett here. And Brett said, I've been playing around with your Ag PhD fertilizer removal app and was recently tinkering with grain corn yields and nitrogen amounts. And there's a linear correlation here. It's 1.12 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of grain in terms of removal. Is there not a cutoff to which the stover starts to take less than 45% of the total N? Wondering to what yield goals is that line realistic? Was thinking maybe under 150, maybe more than 45% of the total N, and above 250 would be below 45% of the total N. Just wondering if there'd be a little difference at different yield levels.
Well, at this point, the answer is no. I've never seen any research on that. And Darren, I want you to think about like when you went out to see Francis Childs, 400 bushel corn. Well, what were his stalks like? They were enormous. So nope, I don't think that there is anything. I've never seen any research showing that you can change it once you get above a certain yield level. And so correct me if I'm wrong, Darren, but I mean, stalks were enormous.
Right. Yeah, in terms of the grain removal too, I believe they've ground up the corn kernels to see what's actually in that grain to know what's going on. And you're right, Brian. If you're going to hold those big 20 kernel around 50 kernel long ears like Francis Childs had, it took a really big stalk. And it was one of the things that amazed me the most. I've had a chance to go to a lot of high yielding farms. And just looking at the stalk diameter, even in soybeans, this has been impressive to me. And I was talking to one of our neighbors, set a record in South Dakota for the highest soybean yields ever last year. And he said where he had singulation and got everything right and had the plants with the most pods on them, the stalk diameter was like the base of his thumb. And where he had doubles or triples or didn't get things spaced just right, and they had less pods per plant, those plants were maybe like his pinky for a stalk. So yeah, that stalk diameter is going to vary as those yield levels vary too. And I realize it's not exactly perfect in every field, but it's going to get you awfully close. Thanks for the question and the feedback, Brett. We really appreciate that. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions today. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.